Hello and welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is a headline written down this time. He's not
Amanda Krafcik.
Yes, but besides Amanda, we have he's not a manslaughterer. It's Joel. There's some good lines in this movie, but I didn't get to it fast enough.
Hey there, little mama.
Yes. So this is the.
This one, I should say happy birthday to both of you. Happy birthday.
Thank
you
so much.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yay. Mm-hmm.
And also happy birthday to former guest Melanie. Her birthday is around time our birthdays are. But,
oh, yeah.
Oh, very cool. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Some weird cosmic coincidence.
Yeah. Pam Grier episode. Listen to the whole thing and the crazy moment towards the end. But this is the second half of the Mo Better Blues 1990 pairing. Wild Heart won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. I say it differently every fucking time. I'm not sure the right way.
Tomato, tomato.
People know what I'm talking about. But,
it's pronounced Hanukkah.
I don't want to go through all that again. So Wild Heart won the Palme d'Or, and the Oscar winner was Dancing with Wolves. A movie that I only know as, like, a pop culture reference and nothing more. And, so, Amanda, why did you pick Wild at Heart?
Wild at Heart? Mm-hmm. Out of all the Lynch films, it's probably one of my favorite. I don't know if it is my absolute favorite, but it's definitely one I enjoy, and I feel like every time I return to it, I like it even more. Kind of like I mentioned a little bit talking to you guys before we started recording. I feel like if I saw it even earlier, I would have somehow loved it more if possible. That might be a little weird, considering it's just kind of still somewhat deserving of that possible like NC-17 X rating, whatever it was that the United States was going to give it in terms of just the violence and the themes and the sexual content and whatnot. But it's kind of like somewhat linear, somewhat surreal, got a lot going on, and I just think it's just a blast to watch every time, so that's why I picked it.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for giving me an excuse to rewatch it, because, like, this...
Yeah, you're welcome.
I was saying earlier, too, like, if I wish someone were showing me this when I was 16, because I would have been obsessed with this. Because, like, this movie is, like, for me, like, it's almost perfect. And, like, my favorite Lynch movie is, Blue Velvet, but this is, like, for me, right below Blue Velvet. I like it. I like this more than Mulholland Drive, which I think might be blasphemy to some people, but, like, this is just more watchable, and it's more fun. And I like Mulholland Drive is great and all. It's just, like...
It's excellent, yeah.
Yeah, but if it's not, like, a movie I want to sit down all the time and watch, this is, like, I can sit down and watch this, and it has a lot of, like, the David Lynching stuff that I like. It's also just super fun and ridiculous.
Yeah. I agree. I feel like it would be a pretty cool pairing with maybe like Badlands or just, you know, just kind of just fun road movie, because it's definitely got that vibe. Although it's not really that entirely, I feel like the road movie is just there to like have an excuse to have like these characters kind of travel through hell, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it'd be pretty cool to pair with that. I always kind of think that when I rewatch it. The first thing that comes to my mind is Badlands for whatever reason.
Yeah, it made me think Tarantino saw this and was like, oh, True Romance. And this is also that California movie a couple of years after actors came out. And Natural Born Killers is kind of in this vein a little bit. Like, there's a couple, there has to be some more like 90s road type movies where like that, like this feels like the spawning point of like, don't say ripping it off, but like, just trying like a different way to do like the road movie. And I think it's also kind of like the best one of the bunch I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has aged better than some of them.
Yeah, I definitely think it's just really just the, I mean, everybody uses it now, but just calling it that Lynchian feel, that Lynchian factor, just the surrealist side of it, because it's kind of, I mean, it definitely has, you know, the story of, oh, they're in love, and, you know, they're going to go to California to get away from everything, and just that whole element to it, I guess, just to exist as a story. But there's just so much of it that's just totally bonkers and nuts, and just the cast of characters I run into. Yeah. You can definitely tell that, like, Twin Peaks is, like, happening at the same time with just all of these weird characters and just kind of having a lot of the same cast kind of show up and be in the movie.
And, Joel, we haven't talked to you yet, so what do you think of this movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is your first time seeing it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it was pretty good. Pretty good for a movie. If you like movies, I recommend it. I'm just kidding. I was trying to... when I finished it earlier today, I was thinking, like, who would I recommend this movie to? Because I feel like...
Yeah.
Unless you're, like, into Twin Peaks...
Yeah.
If you're somebody who, like, totally did love Twin Peaks, then yes, totally watch this movie. You're totally going to get it, and you're going to get a huge kick out of it. If you're somebody who was wishy-washy on it, then maybe you should skip it, because it's just going to be just a longer version of that nonsense that I guess you would think would be more violent and more sexual. It's like... It's the same situation with the Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. It's like, whoa, this is somebody, you know, you let David Lynch off the leash, and this is what you actually get from him instead of the TV show.
Yeah.
And but this one, as opposed to every other Lynch one I've seen, well, except for Dune, I guess, has an actual happy ending, which is to skip straight to that.
Yeah.
And I think that...
Yeah.
That gives it a big advantage for, like, the average watcher over, you know, Mulholland Drive or Blue Velvet.
Yeah, I haven't read the book that it's based on, but I know that, I think it's Gifford is the author, that, like, Lynch ended up reading it and saying that he absolutely hated the ending and that he wanted to do a much happier ending.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, it was supposed to end... I'm just trying to remember, like, with Sailor and Nicolas Cage leaving her.
Oh, there's a series of, like, 7 books, so...
Right. I think just the initial book, like, the very first book, if I remember correctly, it was supposed to be that he left her. I'm sure that that changed as the books went on, but...
Right.
But, yeah, so he was like, yeah, I need a happy ending.
Yeah. So,
which I thought was interesting.
So, Amanda, how would you sum up this movie?
How would I sum up this movie? I'd kind of say is it's definitely, I mean, if you know anything about David Lynch and you watch this, it's you know, nobody told you it was his movie, you'd know instantly that it's his movie. It's just has him all over in terms of his style, the music, the lighting, the crazy characters, just the weird, crazy shit that happens that sometimes just doesn't make sense. It definitely has all of that and more, but it also has... like I said, kind of that road movie with two lovers, and just kind of that cast of characters they run into, and her insane mother, which was her mother in real life, playing her mother in the movie. But anyways, it's kind of, you know, it's got that love story, it's got that road movie going on, but then it's just got everything extra that David Lynch brings you. So it's just... sounds kind of generic. It's just entirely a wild ride, and just every, as you know, you just kind of think that you've run into the craziest character, and then Willem Dafoe comes along, or which is easily the scariest part of the movie to me, at least.
Oh yeah, he feels like
in that car accident scene. I mean, the movie's just nuts.
Yeah, and like
the Wizard of Oz stuff going on everywhere.
Yeah, we're gonna jump around because like I don't feel like going, but like.
It's so hard to sum up. Like, yeah. I feel like, you know, if you say it's a love story, but it's like the road movie, but it's a black comedy, it's a crime film. Like, I mean, you could call it so many things. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neo-noir stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. And like, my favorite moment is the end when he, after Sailor, has a vision of the Good Witch. And he says, yes. I apologize for calling you guys homosexuals.
Yeah, I just, oh, and so like this, fun. I just love this, the snakeskin like jacket quote that he has. Or he's like, initially when Lula picks him up and he's out of prison, and he's like, oh, did I ever tell you this jacket represents a symbol of my individuality and my belief in personal freedom? And then like he says, And he just says that a few other times in the movie, and like trivia too, like I found out that apparently that was Nick Cage's jacket in real life, so I just thought that was great.
Not surprised.
Yeah, exactly. But just silly stuff like that throughout that I love.
Yeah, like this, I saw some Letterboxd reviews that were disheartening, saying like Nick Cage is so bad and good at the same time. It's like, no, this is good acting. Like he's just like crazy. This like Lynch and him is like the, I think the best combination for Cage. Yeah, like it's
great pairing.
Great pairing, because I just love seeing Nick Cage go crazy with someone who's willing to like let him go crazy to this level. And but Lynch, though, it's like somehow contained, and it like makes sense yes. for him to go that far. Which I guess if you're not into it, it can get grating and like too silly and ridiculous. But I just love Cage at like full manic energy the whole time.
Yeah.
My problem with anyone who would review any Lynch movie complaining about any part of acting in them I don't think they have the perspective to see that the reason why it feels strange, and this is just my opinion, but the reason why the acting in these movies and TV shows that he directs specifically feels strange is because it seems more realistic than scripted dialogue. Like the way people just kind of goofy talk to each other, and they don't really say anything without things, and you know, will repeat things that they've said, and everything comes off feeling unnatural on the screen to us because we're used to seeing people say their line, and this is more like your character is a person and this is what they're presenting.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
But so since we all love this movie, like, I want to start out with the negatives so we get out like all that out of the way.
What negatives?
I was hoping you two would have something negative to say about this.
Well, I'd say it's too short.
Yeah, it flies by. I'm totally with you. It totally flies by. I mean, I could have been like one of those reviews I've read where it's like the acting's awful, which I did read recently, and it just kind of was funny to me. Like you said, like I feel like they don't really know David Lynch's movies and his type of characters and just how crazy they are, and they're somewhat real at the same time. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. It's kind of like complaining about a favorite or like complaining about certain food before you try it. Like it's kind of like there's people that are like that, which I totally get. Like, you have to be adventurous to try certain types of food. I feel that movies are the same way. But anyways, if I had to make like a complaint with this, it's definitely its length. It just totally, I feel like you mentioned, there's a whole series of these books. Like I hate to say this, but I almost wish there was even another movie. Like I can't believe I'm saying, because generally sequels are not good, but this one, I could totally see these characters together and what other, you know, extra characters they run into along the way, if you will.
There's another movie supposedly based on like the third book in the series, and it stars the character Isabella Rossellini is playing. And in that movie, it's like Rosie Perez. Like I'm kind of dying to see that movie, but I know it's going to be nothing like this one.
But that is a lot of crazy energy between those two. They had that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Can you guys think of any other complaints? I mean, it's just the length for me, I think.
Spencer, come on.
That's when she says Toto looks like Toto.
I guess there are a couple scenes here and there that are slower that like this time I noticed, but it's but so minuscule that it doesn't matter.
Was it Santos?
I don't remember. I just remember it being like there are a couple parts where it's like this is a little slower than everything else. But that might be it, really.
I see. So perfect. Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. So other 1990 movies? No.
Wow.
All right. So how you guys want to approach?
What do you guys?
Oh, no,
go ahead.
No, you go. You had something to say.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you guys what you thought about how like much Sailor and Lula love The Wizard of Oz, like, what your thoughts were on that? I feel like the first time I saw it, I felt like it was somewhat out of place. And then a few times, you know, in rewatching it, it just kind of totally perfectly works with it, as silly as that is. And just their journey is that, you know, this sounds silly, but it is like that yellow brick road, if you will. And I don't know. I just don't know if you guys had more thoughts on that.
I feel like as a one-off reference, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been like, oh, okay, sure, you guys are on a journey.
Yeah.
But like they kept throwing in, you know, the obviously the visions of the witch and the whole scene after Willem Dafoe's in the room. She's trying to click her heels.
Yeah.
And
that always makes me laugh.
It's like I feel like Willem Dafoe is kind of the wizard at that point. Like he's the snake oil salesman who's trying to convince Nicolas Cage that, like, oh, you do this one last job, you'll be set. Look at my teeth. No, but
that'd be really creepy. If that was the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, it's like the man behind
the curtain. Oh boy.
Because I'm used to Lynch, like it didn't seem weird to me, which I think means it probably is weird. I don't know.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny. She saw, like, her mom, Diane Ladd, I should probably say her name at some point, yeah, as the Witch of the West on the broom as they're driving. That just is always funny to me, too, though.
Okay, I was wondering who that was. I meant to look up. But,
yeah.
I really kind of wish, okay, a minor complaint, that Bruce Stern was the dad. who gets burned up, because that woman, a great little cameo for him. Which
I mean, just for the hell of it? I don't
know. Yeah, just for the hell of it. I mean, you have Laura Dern's mom, why not have her dad in the movie, too?
What? Yeah. Bruce Dern is not Laura Dern's dad.
I thought Bruce Dern was.
What are you talking about?
Wait, what?
No.
What are you talking
about? No, yeah. Yeah, he is. It's pretty sure he is.
Leland Palmer, right? Laura Palmer's dad?
What? We're talking about...
What are you talking about?
Oh, you're talking about Laura Dern.
Yeah.
Man, I am tripping balls.
It's okay. And unless, you know, the sky is falling. I thought it was Diane Ladd and Bruce Dern that were her parents.
Oh, they're actual parents. See, yes. I didn't know that Diane Ladd was her actual mother.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
okay. Yes. No, I don't know things.
Okay.
Okay, so she's Laura Dern, and then Bruce Dern, and they were, because you said Grace Zabrinsky is, they're both in Big Love, but she played Laura's mom. See, you said Laura, and I thought Laura from Twin Peaks.
No.
See, it's all my brain. It's not you.
Sorry, that's okay. Okay. You're not talking backwards, we're good.
Anyways, there's no reason to have Bruce Dern in the movie.
Okay.
There's no reason.
It's a personal decision.
Yeah, case closed.
Bruce Dern was like, I ain't gonna be in a fucking movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay, but I was reading on Brightwall Dark Room. Did I get the name right this time? I think I got it right this time. But there's a piece on Wild Heart about the use of audio and how audio is like, I mean, it's Dave Lynch, so like the sound design is like integral. It's not his typical like whooshy, eerie sound design. It's very notably different compared to what people like would assume from him, but it still works. It's the same mood of like you have the jazz in the beginning, and you have like the thrash metal, and you have like all this like clashing, very odd. Very disparate types of music playing over everything, and it just sets like this crazy mood for the energy for the energy of the movie, and like how like it's just like this is yet another brilliant example of his sound design. But
I think like that band, like that or the thrash metal band, they're real. I can't remember their name. I know they begin with a P, and that's awful. Like I know it's a real thrash metal band from like the 80s.
I don't say Pestilence, but that's a death metal band from the 80s. So
yeah, and then obviously Love Me Tender. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, all the Elvis stuff.
All the Elvis stuff.
Which
yeah.
I imagine, I don't know if it's in the book, but I kind of want to pretend that's Nick Cage telling Lynch, "I want to sing Elvis," and Lynch being okay, and just letting him go with it.
I mean, Elvis is expensive. Like, I think even to do the covers like they were doing, so.
Yeah,
but I feel like it would have to be a very specific decision.
Yeah, but Cage is a famously huge Elvis fan. He even married Elvis' daughter briefly.
When it comes to, like, the things that we find out Nick Cage is a huge fan of, I always wonder if he was a fan before he, like, was about to get a movie role. I'm a huge fan of Tearing My Face Off. Hold on.
I mean, he named his son...
It's just a coincidence that I was in that movie.
He named his son Kal-El, so, like, that's pretty
crazy. Right, yeah. but he was almost cast as Superman in some... He even did, like, screen tests as Superman. It's like, were you a Superman fan before that?
Maybe.
It's kind of like makes me think that he would wear the T-shirt with like the star of the Starship Enterprise, but he would put Star Wars number one fan. Because like, that's all it makes me think of.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know the name of this band. It's bothering me.
I have one point. My phone. I have one point in time. I can't remember.
Yeah. But yeah, the music's fantastic in this. That's just every Lynch film.
Power Mad is the name of the band.
There you go. I was right about the P. Yeah.
See, another thing that confused me about, to go back to this Bruce Dern thing. All
right.
At first, I thought you were saying you wanted Bruce Dern to replace Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, God, no.
And I was going to reach through the microphone. But
you're going to be okay. Like most of film Twitter that's like, oh, wow, Paris, Texas is amazing.
Yeah. Hey, they're right.
They are right, but it was a little late. It's okay.
Yeah. It's Paris, Texas is amazing, but Harry Dean Stanton is the reason. Anyways.
Yeah. Harry Dean on Pure Cinema at one point, Ellert came to like, if you have Harry Dean in your movie, it's instantly not pretentious. It's grounded and like real. And seeing him in his movie is like, oh yeah, I get what he's talking about. Once you see like Harry Dean show up, it's like, okay, yeah, this is like a real a real movie with like real emotion behind it.
I mean, I wouldn't say Repo Man is pretentious, but I wouldn't say it's grounded and real.
Yeah,
I'm paraphrasing what Errol said like 2 years ago.
I have to listen to that episode. I don't think I listened to it. But yeah, I'm there on Repo Man, and maybe even, like, wasn't he in Christine, too? Like,
He's in a lot of movies. I don't think.
Yeah, a ton, but I feel like maybe that one?
Yeah, I can't remember what episode. I think it's the first or second season.
And Alien is very real, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Is it cool, Dan Luke? That's cool. I didn't remember that. Oh, he is in Christine.
Yeah.
Who is he? I just watched it.
Probably a cool middle-aged dude. He's pretty chill.
How'd you guys feel about the sex scenes, the number of them, the explicit nature of some of them? I mean, honestly, saying explicit sounds wrong because it's not like during the sex scenes, other than seeing facial things, you're not really seeing much. But
And like hands on a bed moving. I mean, I don't know who wants to go first. Okay, I'll go.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yeah. I feel like it was kind of really important for how extreme the characters were and their situation. And they're kind of almost like one character more than their individual characters. And they're both a mess, if you will. And they both have that bond. So I felt that it made sense and it was necessary as much as kind of all the interesting people they run into along their journey and all the things they've encountered. I just kind of felt that without them, it would have been emptier, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of almost like asking for the erotic nature of Blue Velvet to kind of be removed. I feel like it'd be a shell of itself, if that makes sense. Like, I kind of, it needs to be there. I don't know if you guys can say that better than me or your thoughts are different.
I mean, similar thoughts, like it. The movie, like, is basically the sense around like their passionate love for each other, and like,
right,
and since the movie is so extreme and out there, like, you really do need those like quote unquote explicit sex scenes, you know,
right?
I mean, they are more graphic, I guess, in terms of like moaning and stuff compared to other like mainstream Hollywood. I didn't check if this is like a studio picture or not, but like compared to other American movies of the time, like it didn't go that far. Like this was the era of the Iraq thriller, but like it's not like like the Verhoeven one, the cross legs basic thing. It's not like that type of racism. Like it's more human, and it's not as like it doesn't feel forced at any point. It's like, yeah, of course these people have like this crazy passionate sex all the time, every chance they could.
Right.
Yeah, it feels passionate. Like they have passion. You feel this the love that they have for each other, being physical and mental and everything. Like it just adds on to it. Like they get each other and they're talking about how much they love you. I love it when you do this, and I love it when you say that, and I love your mind. And on top of that. And like this movie, you're saying almost got an NC-17 rating. Like it must be because portrayal of female pleasure, which I know is like a big,
it's a big no-no.
Yeah. Like the man can be like, yeah, but if that woman's enjoying herself, that's a sin.
I feel like it's also because of the head scene that gets blown off. Mm-hmm. Might have also been a reason why. And I think they made it like better, quote unquote, by adding smoke. That's kind of what I remember reading. But I think that's a part of it too. But yeah, definitely the sexual content, absolutely. Because how dare they? Hmm. Yeah, it definitely plays a role.
Yeah,
it made me laugh so hard.
Yes,
because it's not his head. It's like the back of his head. It's like his scalp. And then you get a straight up Yojimbo reference.
Yes, I love that.
With a hand.
Dog with a hand.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this movie has my favorite openings to any movie ever. Because, like, Nick Cage beats a man to death who's about to stab him. And just goes on and is like, oh, what is this movie? I'm immediately interested in whatever Dave Lynch is going to throw at us.
Yeah, it definitely grabs you.
Yeah, very unusual for any other Lynch movie is, like, we actually go back and see the events that led up to that. I think typically we would have just been left like, whoa, that was crazy. Okay, well, you know, he's our hero.
And then, like, he's asked to explain in an interview, and it's just like, no.
Yep, exactly. My most personal film.
That's what makes him great. One of me, I think, makes him great.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, Amanda, do you think Nick Cage is sexy in this movie? Or do you think, like, how
do I think?
Why are you asking her?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What are you implying?
It's okay. It's a sexy movie. I don't know.
I mean, I think that type of character he playing is, he's kind of, I feel like even though this movie is just so like extreme, if you will, and just crazy and just nuts, and it almost feels more like a nightmare than something that's real, if that makes sense. But it's kind of also like reminds me a lot of like James Dean a little bit, like a Rebel Without a Cause thing going on. And aside from like Elvis, so it's got like that bad boy vibe, if you will. Absolutely. So I don't know if that's how I would feel about it or what he necessarily is, but he's definitely got a little bit of that going on, like the greaser and you know, whatnot, and he's in prison a lot for doing bad things. So yeah, I mean, maybe. Okay. I don't know if that answers it. Okay. But yeah, I just kept thinking about James Dean and Rebel Without a Cause for whatever reason.
I just wanted at least one female perspective on it, because he definitely is sexualized, like as much as Laura Dern sexualized, Nick Cage is sexualized.
They're pretty equal.
Yeah, you get a lot of a hairy chest, him just hanging out, and like, and he's not like super buff or anything, but he is in good shape and stuff. So like, you know,
I think they're like equal in that regard, like kind of giving off that vibe, and also like their chemistry is just ridiculous. Like I was trying to think when I was watching it, just in terms of more modern movies, you know, movies that have characters that exude that type of chemistry that they have. And that's a hard list to put into place, honestly. Like I don't think anybody really beats their chemistry to me in terms of recent movies.
don't know. Some people would say Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, allegedly.
Oh, what?
What the hell are you talking about?
I've met people
in like the
in like La La Land and the other movies they were in together. I've heard people say that they have good chemistry, but I don't. It's all right.
I also enjoy robots.
It can be all right at times, but it's not consistent. But all right. So like we talked about like lynching things with this. Like so this carries on because what year was the Twin Peaks? Was it 1990 also?
Yes.
90 to 91. Okay. Yeah.
So, like, this feels like it's the same universe, and, like, there's even the... Because, like, Lynch likes the theme of, like... Because, like, the incest shows up in Twin Peaks, and it shows up here. Well, I guess it's still abuse, but, like, abuse seems to be a thing that shows up a lot. And, like...
Yeah.
In the, I feel like... Although I haven't seen season two of Twin Peaks in a while, like, this feels like the most explicit... I haven't seen the Firewalk for Me in a while either. But this feels like the most explicit depiction of like sexual abuse in Lynch thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you mean by a family member?
Yeah, that quote.
Because I just watched what's his name in Blue Velvet fisting somebody, so I don't, you know.
Yeah.
That seemed abusive.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper. That's Dennis the word. Hopper.
Yeah, the Frank Booth character.
I think. So yeah. So just family. Okay, just checking.
Yeah, I mean it's Uncle Marvin or whatever. Felt like not really.
Yes. Yeah, I mean honestly, it's that flashback that she has more than once that like is disturbing. And then with her like bloody on the bed screaming.
Mm.
And then kind of obviously how Willem Dafoe's character is with her and that. Pretty frightening scene, which I thought was even more disturbing than the original one. But it works. I mean, yeah, absolutely works. You kind of can totally see her terror and her fear. And a lot of movies, I think, really fail at doing that. Like, they either glorify it or they kind of show more than they need to and then seem somewhat preachy. I feel it's very... easy to kind of understand her pain just from the perspective of the audience, you know, obviously not experiencing, but just kind of just viewing it from far away to see how it's affected her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I kind of, I remember that showing up, like the Dafoe scene when he like is creepy, but like, what happens like, oh no, this is going to be like Death Wish 2 territory. Cause it's a very sexual movie, but then it's like, oh, thank God, it didn't go that far. It's been like 5 or 6 years since I've watched this, so I was very thankful. It was still it's upsetting, but it was upsetting in a way that isn't exploitative.
I wouldn't have been shocked if it had gone that way, not knowing anything about the movie. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time, like you said, something went that way in a Lynch production.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like. I kind of just think that most of his movies are tied into the same universe, and you know, the Blue Velvet, Wild at Heart, Mulholland Drive, and Twin Peaks and stuff like that, because of the eeriness that he has of those places going throughout the movies. Like this time, I noticed in this movie, Wild at Heart, we have that place where Isabella Rossellini lives, but we don't know what's going on there. We just see the guy that Santos call that place, and we just hear ominous, scary music.
Yeah.
It's like within these like shacks that you just drive by and you don't think twice about. You know, the windows are boarded up. There's like this true evil that could be brooding in there. Exactly. And then in Blue Velvet, which I watched part of here, the beginning where Kyle MacLachlan is just throwing stones after he visited his father in the hospital. Like, it's just this, like, shack in the middle of a field, you know, and that kind of starts off with the whole, you know, finding the ear thing. And then in Twin Peaks, you got the gas station, abandoned gas station, where on the second floor, you know, magical beings are freaking meeting, for God's sake. Like, it's just like he has this feeling like there's right around the corner at a place where you never look twice, right. You know, possibly behind a dumpster at a diner.
Yeah.
Something terrible is happening.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't feel he's ever really elaborated much on that. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I always kind of just saw that as, I mean, I could be incorrect. Maybe he has. But I just kind of feel like he's just commenting on just normal life and that there's a lot of stuff happening that we kind of are blind to.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like Pleasantville, but better.
Yeah.
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 Or like blind to, but we ignore it. Like 20 pieces actually pleasant to like ignoring the darkness that's happening around you.
Exactly.
Yeah, you ignore that castle even though there's a man with scissors for hands up there. Wait.
So the cast is
Bonkers?
Yeah, bonkers. But I want to point out Calvin Lockhart is one of the assassins, hitmen, after Sailor and them. And he was in Cotton Comes to Harlem playing the corrupt preacher. Mm. And he's also the electrician in Fire Walk With Me, which I think was his last movie. Because I think he died like the next, after, in 91 or 92.
That's very cool.
Yeah. But it's nice seeing him again. But although I wish, kind of like with every side character, I wanted like five more scenes with them. I just wanted to live in this world even more.
I couldn't get enough of Grace Zabrinsky doing whatever the fuck she was doing. Like, I've never seen her act like that, but I was like,
Sarah Palmer.
Can we keep going here?
Yeah.
Crazy lady.
One more. crutches. Fred Jones, is that the guy? The one who talked about the pigeons with that crazy voice. And it's like, okay, can he join them on their adventure and just chat about weird shit? I want more of him.
Yeah.
Is that when they were sitting in, what's that place called?
The diner at
they're at the diner.
In Enola. And he is like, I can't even listen to that voice. I have to watch her scene again. But he's like, the pigeons spread disease. And it's like, and then they just look at him as if that's normal. And they carry on like, whatever.
Trying to interrupt our adventure with your pigeon bullshit, but you know what? We're busy. Now, the place in Big Tuna,
mm-hmm.
when they're just sitting around like in the evening, and that's the first time we meet Willem Dafoe, that's my nightmare.
Really?
Yes.
Being surrounded by these weirdos and they're just talking nonsense and you're just kind of sitting politely there.
Just dealing with it.
A bunch of women come out all topless. I don't know. I don't want to know what their story is, but I got to get the hell out of here. Like,
pretty sure it's implied they're prostitutes.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll go. You know what? No. Sorry.
They're filming a porno or something. Or one guy said, "I think."
Oh, that's right.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
One of those crazy Texas pornos, I said. I just love that, like, when Nicolas Cage, they go back into the room, and he's just, like, peeks out the window to make sure that they're, like, not following him or what's going on out there. It just makes me think of Bill Murray in Groundhog Day.
And one of the weirdos, you barely see him as... it's either, I think it's Pruitt Taylor Events or Taylor Pruitt Events. I forget which order, but he...
It's Pruitt Taylor.
Yeah, and he has that crazy shimmery, like, shivering eye condition that, like, is perfect for his movie because, like, it took me a second to be like, he looks familiar because he's in the X-Files. That's a really good episode, like, season four or five. But once the eye twitch, I feel like, oh, it's that guy. And it's like, he has this great weird face in addition to like that crazy eye twitch. Like, even though like some of these characters are show up for like a scene, Lynch just knows how to cast people with like these really interesting faces and then this like, don't say tics because like Pruitt Taylor Vince is kind of born with that condition, but like this like certain like weird energy. And he knows perfectly how to be like, I'm going to put this person in like two scenes, but you'll remember it forever. Even though like they say maybe one sentence at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And John Lurie's in it too.
He had, like, those crazy teeth he wears in it.
Which one is him?
I'm pretty sure, like, there's so many characters. I'm pretty sure he's that scene where they're all, like, sitting at the table with the people dancing, and it's all scary. When they're in Big Tuna. I'm pretty sure he's in that scene. I know his character, I think, is Sparky, if I remember right. I'm just trying to remember. I think that's the scene he's in.
But, another Lynchian carryover is, the red lipstick and red nails. Because, like, that's a thing he's into, or maybe it's, like, a 50s aesthetic, because, like, Lynch is mm-hmm. super into the 50s, and, like, I can't remember if Lynch is super into Douglas Sirk or John Waters, or maybe both of them are. I can't remember. You guys can go. I can't remember. There's something about, like, melodrama and, like, the weird soap opera, like, plotting of this, but, I might be misremembering if Lynch is super into Douglas Sirk or not.
I don't know.
Alright, who are your guys' favorite side characters?
Like I said, Grace Zabrinsky, for me, was definitely it. Willem Dafoe would be hard not to mention. I don't know what was going on with Crispin Glover.
What do you mean?
Like, what was that side story even about?
Disappearing.
Cockroaches. I don't know.
Okay, just checking.
I think I covered it.
I should have, like,
making sandwiches at night, right?
Yeah, right. I guess.
This, like, yep. And the glove, once again.
Oh, yeah, the gloves, yeah.
Yes.
Although, no superpowers this time. Spoiler alert for Season 3 of Twin Peaks. Can you even spoil Twin Peaks? I don't think you can.
I don't know.
No, you could say child hit with truck. Does that spoil anything? No.
Not really. Okay. But, I don't know, for me, like, favorite side character outside of Willem Dafoe being, like, crazy full Willem Dafoe might be Harry Dean Stanton as, like, the one, like, normal person. Or seemingly normal person in the whole movie.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't get much of his backstory besides, like, it's Harry Dean Stanton, so you kind of have this built-in, like, backstory because he gives off, like, that kind of chill, grounded energy to everything. Even, like, Alien, he still has that, like, grounded, like, real energy to him, and seeing him, this is like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, of course this guy would exist and, like, be, was he, like, a private eye? I can't remember what he was.
Like, I could have sworn he wasn't an assassin, wasn't he? The character of Johnny.
Yeah, I guess he must have been an assassin, but he's, like, the nicest assassin of all of them.
Or I could be confusing him, but
We're talking about Harry
Dean.
Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah,
his character in this. I know he was, like, her mother's lover, maybe. There's just so many characters.
I think he said something about him being a PI, but he was also going to go kill him. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different matches being lit at all times in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, side characters, I'm definitely Harry Dean Stanton and. I think Isabella Rossellini, too, just because, she's such a presence.
Yeah. Oh, Sherilyn Fenn, that scene is amazing.
Yep.
Looking for her, I believe her mom's hairpin, and, like, mm-hmm. that's, like, besides the opening and, like, the apology for being homophobic later on, like, that's the scene that always sticks with me.
Yes.
Is just, like, yes. her covered in blood on the side of the road, just, like, talking nonsense. Kind of like in Ivan's childhood, the old man that Ivan runs into who's looking for a nail in his bombed out house, and then Ivan picks up the nail, like, no, that's the wrong nail, I need a different nail, and, like, kind of like a similar thing of, like, she's like, I need my mom's bobby pin.
The girl in the accident, Sherilyn Fenn, too.
Mm-hmm.
She's, that accident scene's just nuts. I feel like Lula says, like, oh, it's like a bad omen, if I remember right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because it's just gore everywhere. Another reason for the possible X rating, probably.
Yeah. I should clarify, I watched a 2-hour cut that as the first version, the first DVD that came out. There's, I think, a longer cut that's on a Blu-ray that came out recently, like last few years, but I haven't, or it was supposed to come out. But there is a longer cut out there.
I have the new, like, Shout Factory Blu-ray release of it.
Yeah.
That Tony Stella did the cover art for.
Oh, I should get that then.
That's pretty cool. It's, like, beautiful, the cover art that he did. Yeah, I think that version, I feel like it's way shorter. It's definitely not 2 hours. It's got to be, like, an hour and a half. At least that's how it felt when I watched it. I'm going to check and see the length.
The runtime on the... But said on the Netflix DVD said 2 hours, 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's the version I watched, so.
Okay. I thought there was like a long, or the canned version was longer.
It still feels short to me. That's weird.
That's just it. It's throwing me off because it just feels so short to me, too. Like, yeah. I just go on for another hour at least, and I'd still be wanting more, probably.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to go grab my Blu-ray. Hang on a second.
I'm seeing Jack Nance always makes me sad knowing how he died.
That's true.
Yeah, but he's such like a weird performer. I just love seeing him drop and stuff. And like, and him barking like a dog. Like, I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but it makes me laugh every time. Like, both times.
I don't even know.
All right, so, yeah, I was wrong. It's definitely 124 minutes, at least the Blu-ray I have, so 2 hours, 4 minutes. Yeah, it feels like it's 90 minutes. So.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Yeah.
So it sounds like we all saw the same version.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
But I know there, I think the canned version was longer cut, but I don't know if that version is available, but I want a longer cut of this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But,
I don't need.
Oh. Yeah, but Bobby Peru feels like Frank, like don't say knockoff Frank Booth, but feels like a cousin of Frank Booth, giving off that same like predator energy, predator as in like like an animal predator, not like the alien predator, but well, I guess alien predator energy too, but like the way his lips are always weirdly open and he has like his teeth look so small. His gums seem to, like, take up most of his mouth. Like, it's such a crazy visual. And you see him, like, breathing through his mouth a whole bunch. Like, so many small details of that performance. Like, only Willem Dafoe could pull that off and make it effective and creepy and off-putting, like, to that degree. And it'd still be like, yeah, I want to see more of this character. He's crazy.
He has a crazy amount of range, because just thinking about, like, recent releases, Florida Project, I don't know if you guys saw that. Like, his character in that is the total opposite of this. And he's, like, very caring and loving for all of the people in this hotel he takes care of that are kind of down and out.
Hmm.
So it just totally shows you what he's capable of. Just a recent example.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys have...
It'd be so easy to typecast him as a villain, really would.
Yeah, he was for a while, or like he'd be, or he's a show up as a minor character to get killed off, and out of the furnace. That okay movie from like 8 years ago with Christian Bale and someone else and some other people. It's kind of forgettable, but he shows up as like a drug dealer, drug lord person who like works with like someone's brother, and he kind of shows up just to get killed off. For like a dramatic effect halfway through, and it's like, well, you just killed off the reason to watch a whole fucking movie.
He made a good like Van Gogh too. I watched that At Eternity's Gate that came out 2 years ago. I mean, the movie was okay, but he was really good in it.
Yep.
Oh no, I think Scorsese there was a pretty good. I forgot the name you said already. I'm gonna say Truffaut.
Dreams?
Van Gogh. There we go.
What the hell?
My brain is weird today.
Kurosawa's dreams.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Van Gogh is played by a Scorsese.
Francois Truffaut was played by Vincent Van Gogh, played by Scorsese.
I watched that. I still sound like a New Yorker because Scorsese.
In Close Encounters. Yeah.
Scorsese can't really do can't cover up that New York accent. So, what were your guys' like just favorite moments? Although we've kind of covered some of them, it's like just your favorite moments, like the thing that really stick with you with this. Although Joel just watched it for a first time, so I'm curious.
Yeah, you go first.
Sure. Surprisingly, and Spencer can attest, I'm not a musical person, but I did very much enjoy when the club stopped and Nicolas Cage is like, you guys are starting to sound like E there. Speaking of which, let me sing this song now. You know, and the screaming girls that also sound terrified because it's just randomly happening while he's singing the song. It's like it the double, like, he's so handsome, he's so charismatic, also the world is horrifying thing. So I really dug that. Let's see. And what else really stuck out? You guys want to rattle one off and I'll think?
Sure. Let's see. It's a lot of, like, the quotes, because they're just somewhat real and crazy at the same time, which just makes things work. So that whole, like, Cousin Del scene that we talked about, which is like, why is this here? This is so odd. I feel like, if I remember right, like, Lula is kind of obviously telling Sailor the story, and then after she's done telling the story, Sailor says something like, well, too bad he couldn't visit the old Wizard of Oz and get some advice.
Oh, yeah,
and then she says, well, too bad we all can't, baby. Like, that scene is just so funny to me and great. and then, like, when he says, like, oh, let's go out dancing, and then she just, like, starts dancing frantically on the bed. It's just kind of, like, little things like that that I like. There's so many good quotes. I mean, there's, like, all the snakeskin jacket quotes that he says over and over. Like, you look like a clown in a stupid jacket, and he's like, this is a snakeskin jacket. I don't know, it's just stuff like that. It stands out to me.
The when he's talking about like having sex with that woman at some point in his past, and
oh yes,
and he says, "Man, I had a boner with a capital O."
Yeah,
she's like, "Take a bite of peach."
and Lula asks, like, "What color was her hair?" or something like that. And he says, "Jet black, but gentlemen prefer blondes." Like, oh man, that's so cheesy, but so great.
Once again, I got to keep going back to Gray Zabrinsky. The whole, like, having Harry Dean Stanton tied up in the chair, right? They're doing, like, some sort of weird ritual almost. Like, I don't even know what's going on.
Yeah, she makes that with Calvin for a brief moment, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just the freakiness of it is perfect.
You say, like, the lipstick all over the face scene?
Oh, yeah. Man, that was, oh, yes!
Yes.
That was so upsetting.
So good.
Yeah, it looks like, I don't know if this is a reference or not, but, like, in the first Insidious movie, there's a lipstick-colored demon who, like, whose face, who's all red. I kept on thinking, is James Wan, like, throwing a reference to this movie, calling it the lipstick-covered demon, when you have Diane Ladd covered her whole face in lipstick?
I mean, has Marcus done a side-by-side yet?
I don't know. But
I don't know. It's possible. I don't know.
I mean, that's a reference to Black Narcissus. Like, we should do a side-by-side of that.
That's true. That movie's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole, like, lipstick demon, like, covering face with lipstick is, like, that's a little too similar. Like, James Wan, I don't know if he is a cinephile or not, but, like, if it's not a direct reference, then, like, it's pretty striking that he called it that. You're called in the script the lipstick colored demon.
Yeah.
Did he reference, is he the same director who did Aquaman?
Yes.
Any Wild at Heart references in Aquaman? I don't remember.
I tried to watch it on a plane, but the headphones jack didn't work. And so I couldn't watch it.
See, I hate that movie, but... Okay, I'm not going to talk about why I hate that movie.
I was going to say, like, if... isn't Willem Dafoe in Aquaman? Wait a minute.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. But he's not actually working the lighthouse. So.
Oh. No.
That would have been even better, honestly.
All the same universe.
A side-by-side that could be done is there's a lot of close-ups of people lighting striking a match. And in Afro Samurai, the first few times he lights up the joints that he has an endless supply of in his kimono for some reason, you get a close-up of his lighter when he lights the joints. And it's a very similar shot.
That's just good imagery.
It is great imagery.
Striking imagery.
Yeah, literally striking.
I'd like you to erase that part where I said striking imagery so that you can't turn it into a pun that it probably should have been in the first place.
Are you going to edit this episode? Or am I going to edit it?
I was going to say, I'll insert trivia that the actor that is the lighthouse keeper in Aquaman is the actor that played Jango Fett.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Here we go.
Happy Star Wars Day.
Yeah, I saw Attack of the Clones in the theater, but I have no memory of it.
I saw it a few times, and I have some great memories of people being obnoxious in the theater, which made the movie more fun.
Mm. Spoiler alert, barely any clones in that movie.
My dad fell asleep and was snoring. That's kind of the main memory I have from it.
Some guy kept losing his, his leg or his cane, every time there was a quiet love scene. So it was kind of unintentionally funny in a really corny, cheesy way that a wooden leg was falling down the stairs during the love scenes. It kept happening, and it was an IMAX screening, so it was very, very real. So great.
Those steep IMAX theater.
Yes.
Damn it.
I don't like sand, and it's like pop, 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 pop.
I use my magical powers to cut this fruit for you. Ta, 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 ta.
And before I go any further, I think it's safe to recommend that I think we all like this movie a little bit.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
No, I'm just kidding. I love it.
See, were we recording when we were talking about how, we wish we'd seen it or hadn't seen it or stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't know how I would have felt about this if I hadn't already been through Twin Peaks and a couple of Lynch movies. Because I never know what's going to work for me that people like and what's not going to. I mean, everyone goes through that, but...
Yeah.
This movie just... This was the perfect time for me for some reason. It felt good to watch, and I feel happy, so happy that I saw it now.
I'm happy I didn't make you cry like I did for Amore.
Yeah, there were a couple more laughs in this one.
But at Con that year, the jury president was Berlino Bertolucci.
So is that the guy with the butter?
Yes, it is. And he did the Eva Green movie. What's it called? It's a really good movie. The Eva Green.
Didn't he do Blow Up?
What are you talking about? Blow Up?
He did The Last Emperor.
Blow Up was Antonioni.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Antonio Out is De Palma.
Bertolucci, Antonioni, all those Italians.
Yeah.
And he did the ridiculously long 1900.
Yeah,
if I remember right.
Yeah, with you get a young Gerard Depardieu and De Niro, and,
yes,
and you get to see them naked in a scene together.
Whoop! Never gonna watch that.
Why?
And definitely The Butter with The Last Tango in Paris. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Lexi Guermand was on the competition. because Custer will hear this. Ooh. I want to bring that up.
Yeah, he will. Like he's saying right now, like, oh, I love Hard to Be a God.
That's a really good movie.
The movie is great.
It is so good.
It is great.
He's sitting in a room saying it to himself.
Yeah, when he hears this, he'll be like, I hope Spencer brings up Lexi Germa at Cannes that year. But I thought we can segue into the 1990 picks, because one of mine is Talai, which won the Grand Prix that year, and Alexi felt that Talai should have won the Grand Prix, the Palme d'Or, over Wild at Heart.
Sounds like, if I remember correctly, Ebert would have agreed with you. I know he just hated Wild at Heart.
No.
Yeah, Ebert had to stick up his butt about David Lynch for some reason. That's true.
I love reading his angry reviews. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah.
So I said one of my... Yeah, Talai, I should say, is... I should look up how to say the director's name. But it's a movie about a father and son in, like, just a moral situation kind of strings up between them. And you get to see just how they handle this situation. And it's 80 minutes long, because, like, it's Idrissa Ouedraogo. He's from Burkina Faso. He died 2 years ago, I think 2 years ago. But he made a lot of these really great films about, like, family and, like, morality. That a lot of them are, like, under 90 minutes, so if you're, like, a stickler, it's like, I don't like long movies or whatever for some fucking reason. These are great movies to watch, like, because, like, they're direct to the point, and they're full of just, like, he's a master. And I wish his movies were more easily available, but they aren't, because African movies before the 2010s is kind of like a... It's a wild card of maybe there's a French DVD that you can get on eBay for it, and maybe there isn't.
Yeah, or maybe like there'll be another Martin Scorsese Presents box set from Criterion or whatever they're called, where he does like movies people forgot about or don't know about that are international.
Yeah. Oh, and we might do Talai for an episode, depending on the schedule, what I feel like doing over the next few months. So... we might do that, and Kessler will be on for that.
Very cool.
Because I know he...
That's awesome.
A big fan of that movie. And I love it as well, too. And watch... try and track on other Idrissa Ouedraogo movies. Some are on YouTube in full, but I think the subtitles are, like, Spanish or Italian and other shit. So, it's kind of... luck of a draw for that stuff.
Yeah. It's even worse with streaming now to find things. Like, I feel like maybe we touched upon this last time, but as awesome as it is that more people can access movies, there's like not nearly the libraries and content that needs to be there. It's just kind of crazy. Like the other day there was a movie I wanted to watch, and it's not that obscure, and I had to buy the DVD on Amazon because it wasn't streaming anywhere. Like, so I feel like that's a problem. It was Box of Moonlight that I wanted to watch, and yeah, it wasn't streaming anywhere. So
Criterion could step up and help with African movies, but they're slowly,
yeah,
very, very slowly getting to it. Atlantic is getting one, thank God. But
that's such a great movie, and I don't even think like a lot of people still know about it, which is ridiculous.
Even my family, who like watch Netflix almost entirely, don't know that movie is even on Netflix until I told them about it. And I doubt they're ever going to watch it. But
I liked it better than The Irishman, and I really liked The Irishman.
I'm same boat. Although Irishman, like my complaint is I wanted an extra hour to The Irishman because I just like those characters so much.
They're great characters. I mean, I'm not gonna lie though, the CGI like threw me off a tiny bit with the de-aging thing. Like, I don't feel like that's gonna age well. But
I didn't really notice when I watched it.
Like, look at their eyes. They're, like, soulless eyes.
Next time I watch it, I probably will, but I didn't really notice. Yeah.
The movie's great, though.
Yeah. Anyway, who wants to go for 1990? Joel? All
right, I'll go.
Okay, sir.
I'll go. No, okay, I'll go.
You haven't said much lately.
Listen, I not going to go over the things I think we've talked about in previous movies where 1990 has come up, and there's been a couple with, like, To Sleep with Anger, and
The upcoming.
There was something else I was seeing.
By the time this comes out, the episode will be out, actually.
Slacker?
Yes, I've definitely talked about 1990 movies in context of Slacker also, because there was a... What was the... Do you remember that podcast that was going through the AFI stuff that Dave was doing, Spencer?
I'm going to be on an episode when he brings it back.
He did a series called, like, The Missing 25 or something like that, and I did one on Slacker, because I think that is an amazing movie that everyone should see, especially people who only watch, like, regular narrative movies. Like, you need to open your mind a little bit and watch Slacker.
Dave,
you get a huge kick out of it.
Dave Stone Rob, if you're listening, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of your podcast right now. I can't remember what it's called.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine.
You can edit it in later, and it'll just be like a robocall. It'll be like...
You just first subscribe to talking about Turtle, and then move on to the other one. Anyways, so my previous podcast, Science Fiction and Fantasy Movies, it was called Please Don't Send Me into Outer Space. We covered four movies from the year 1990. Start off, we talked about Darkman, Sam Raimi's superhero in quotation marks movie, starring Liam Neeson trying to do an American accent like he typically does. Like, it's just like Batman, but rated R, and very entertaining. Another one that's similar to that came out this year, Dick Tracy. Like, I feel like that would make a good double feature of, like, what they were trying to do with these, like, pulpy action superhero thingies.
Yes.
Even though Dick Tracy's not a superhero, but yeah, I mean, he's got a.
It's very like the Phantom of the Opera, Darkman.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
And silly the way that, like, the Evil Dead movies are silly.
Yes.
Another one, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I stand by this. Like, it is a super entertaining movie, albeit for kids. Like, I still think that there's a lot of fun to be had in watching it as an adult.
Yes. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. DuckTales, the movie, Treasure of the Lost Lamp.
Yes.
Yeah, I
don't even need to go.
Yeah, the show is, like, everyone's classic memory, but I feel like if you watch episodes of the show, they feel really goofy now in a way, because they were serialized in some cases, and the movie just is pretty good summation. Like, you don't have to go back and rewatch the show. You can just watch the adventures that happen in the movie. You get some really good Christopher Lloyd as the villain in that. And the last is the first movie we ever covered, which is Hardware. Richard Stanley has been getting a lot of praise recently because of Keller Out of Space, another Nicolas Cage movie.
Crazy movie, yeah.
Hardware is a science fiction post-apocalyptic movie with a killer robot. It's horror and sci-fi and a little neo-noir, and it's something to behold. I don't know if it's a good movie, but I've watched it a couple of different times. So I think that says something, because I typically don't rewatch movies.
All right.
So that covers it for me. Amanda?
Oh, okay. I'll go.
I choose you.
Thank you. I was so happy with your list. I didn't even have to go. But okay. Thank you. All right. So I wouldn't say kind of like Hardware. I wouldn't say this is good, but it's fun and crazy. It's Chacma. I think I participated in... I think Cinemonster on Twitter, like one of the Hooptobers I did that he hosted. That's kind of when I ended up watching it for the first time. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. I think it was on Shudder at the time. But it's basically just a baboon is given an experimental drug that makes him go insane and kill a bunch of people while they're doing a live action role play game on walkie talkies. And the movie's just nuts and crazy. Like I said, it's not... I wouldn't say it's good, but it is definitely a fun time. So yeah, that's one of mine. Another one, is, Kiarostami's Close Up. Probably one of my favorites of his. I mean, it's kind of hard to really pick a favorite, but it's just simply a like docu-fiction, I think is what you'd call it, about a man impersonating a famous Iranian filmmaker and kind of like cons a family into believing they'll star in his movie. It's absolutely worth watching. It might be on the Criterion channel. I don't know. I probably should have found that out beforehand. My apologies. But yeah, that's a must-see. That movie's great. I'm trying to think other ones. I'm trying to pick because I had a long list. Mirror, Mirror, which is a really cool... I don't know if I'd say it's great either. Like, Chakma, it's just fun. It's kind of... let's say like a supernatural horror movie about like a teenager. I think it's Karen Black, if I remember right, who's obsessed with this antique mirror that's in this house that her family moved into. And it's kind of like this demonic portal with really cool special effects and a bunch of things go wrong without me spoiling it. And I think it just got a Blu-ray release. I don't remember what company released it. But that movie really surprised me because it could have been awful and it was instead a lot of fun and had some pretty cool special effects for the budget they had. And lastly, The Year, Ucho, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, which I know, Martin Kessler did, I think he did, like helped out with an audio commentary for a Blu-ray release recently. I think it was like Second Run that did the Blu-ray release. I saw this on, it might have been Filmstruck right before it was shut down. And it's basically like this couple after going to this political event party, come home and they notice that their house is broken into and there's some weird stuff missing and, phone lines aren't working. And they kind of think that they're under surveillance now. And it kind of also as they're going through this, realizing that their place is broken into and thinking that they're getting spied on, it kind of just their marriage kind of starts to fall apart and they kind of start to realize like different flaws and stuff that they have going on. And it kind of, I feel like in a weird way, it'd make a cool double feature with The Conversation, the Coppola movie, or maybe even watch, going back to Hanukkah, The Hidden. It'd make a cool like if you watch those three together. Mm. Yeah. So I think those are pretty comfortable with that list. Just some interesting movies to watch.
Okay. I said one already, so I'll be brief. Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. Almodovar. Yes. I guess maybe that was his big break. The one before it was his big breakup, but this like was like really solidified him as like a legit top tier filmmaker. But it's hard to sum up because like Almodovar stuff is very melodramatic and kooky and dense. So like, watch it if you're into his stuff and you haven't seen it. But if you're other faint of heart, maybe it's not for you. It deals with some very fucked up subject matter. And the
speaking of NC-17.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What was
I saying? I was gonna add too. Like, I saw that on a plane, so I just wanted to say that on my phone for David Lynch. Yes. Okay, I'm sorry. Go
that's
ahead.
Fine. King of New York, Abel Ferreira. I kind of discovered him a year or two ago, and I kind of love his really gritty, like real gritty, not like fake gritty, like just gross kind of New York movies. And this is like a polished one, but still kind of like a gross New York movie. And it's like Scarface if it was done in like a less hyper stylized, more like serious way almost. And the cast is basically it's also a Spike Lee movie because you have Giancarlo Esposito and Lawrence Fishburne, and it's about like drug dealing in New York. So it's like it's almost feels like. Like this could have been like a Spike Lee movie in if it wasn't like Abel Ferreira, like in a different universe. But and you get Steve Buscemi. The cast is amazing, and it's just this story of this drug lord who like goes down and his downfall. It's Wesley Snipes is in it too, so like another Spike Lee regular.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen King of New York, watch it. It's fucking great. And my last one is a movie everyone should see. The Black Cobra 3, The Manila Connection. It's Fred Williamson as Bob Malone. He goes to the Philippines because there's nuclear weapons. I can't remember. But it's him doing like a knockoff action movie with the Italian film crew because he kind of was at that stage of his career at this point. And it's on Tubi right now. The quality is terrible, but it probably is for the better. But if you like dumb, really stupid action movies, I highly recommend the Black Cobra movies, and this is kind of the best one. And also I'm biased because I love cheap exploitation movies shot in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. I love that setting combined with like sleazy, stupid shit for some reason. But this is just a great piece of action cinema. You know, it's not good, but it's so much fun.
It's awesome. Tubi's awesome. Like, if people don't have that, you should get it. It's free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm watching. I basically use Tubi now just to watch action movies. And they have a lot of action movies. And it's helping save, like, money and, like, time searching YouTube. Like, oh, I can watch, like, 10 different JCVD movies on here. Perfect. So I've been just doing a whole lot of that last few weeks. Instead of, like, watching classy stuff, like, just going through the action movies that I've been wanting to see for a long time.
Joel seems really excited.
About the action movies that Spencer's watching?
Yes.
The Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, yes.
Oh, yes. Just send me a list of the things that you think I should watch, and I can throw them in the garbage as soon as I get them.
Okay, that's fair.
I'm very pretentious. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not. I would gladly watch them if I wasn't busy filling my mind with trash. Oh, other kinds of trash, obviously.
Yeah. But
all movies are fun.
Yeah, all movies have merit, no matter how stupid they are.
Exactly.
Yeah, even like. Exactly. But so Amanda, as of today, that we are recording. Yes. You were just on FlixFlix Canada for like a third or fourth time?
I don't know. At this point, I think I did Pom Poko and Satoshi Kon episode, and I know they like let me talk about my top 10 of 2017 in one episode, so I think this is technically the fourth one, the Star Wars one. I haven't even gotten to listen to it yet. I'm kind of interested to see what he took out.
it's a good chat. Like, I'm not a Star Wars fan. Like, Joel can attest. Okay. Like, I don't really care about Star Wars that much.
Thank you.
But I like hearing your guys' opinion of Star Wars in a way that's not... Because, like, if I see Star... Oh, you're welcome. But if I see, like, it's a Star Wars episode, I'm like, I'm going to skip this because this will be boring or, like, get, like... too nerdy for me. It's like, oh, this is perfect energy between you two just talking about Star Wars.
Aw, thank you. Mm-hmm. I used to be unhealthily obsessed, and then Disney bought it, so that ended real quick. Mm. Yep. Yeah. That's basically spoiler alert for the episode.
Yeah. Message for the listeners and for you two. Perdita Durango, that based on the same series of books as Wild at Heart, apparently is on Tubi TV.
Oh, perfect.
Ooh. Thank you.
Yeah, they are wonderful.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And Vudu has a pretty good selection, too. It's free, but some stuff, I think they have, like, modern stuff, but you have to pay for it. But for the most part, it's free. Why not? This comes out late June?
Yes.
So, Joel, what will our other thing be up and running by then?
I mean, we'll probably have all the episodes out, and if this is coming out by mid-June, you said the 28th, so the end of June. Yeah, I mean, first three episodes will have dropped of the Dead Travel Fast podcast, our podcast about vampires and vampire things, and kind of about me and Spencer and our co-host Sarah, really. But we also talk about vampires as our base subject. Three movies we would have talked about with the original Dracula 1932, 1931,
baby.
1931, sorry. The Dracula from, oh, sorry, Nosferatu. Not the Klaus Kinski version, the original silent movie. And then the horror of Dracula, the Hammer film. And that was just kind of a start-off basis of, like, the Dracula mythos. We also talk about, in the podcast, the actual book Dracula. We're going chapter by chapter. At this point, we're in a break while we get ready for our next thing. The first movie in that series will probably be The Transfiguration, which Spencer, I know, is itching to talk about.
Yeah, movies.
And the theme will be vampire movies that may or may not actually be about vampires.
Very so, cool.
Yeah, which means yeah. Martin will show up. And I know a few people that love that movie, so it's kind of I'm pressured to have someone on, but I don't know who.
Yeah.
So The Hunger, then?
We could actually put that in there, probably.
Is The Hunger about vampires? Aren't they all vampires?
Yes, I don't know. I just threw that in there.
Well, we're going to do The Hunger.
The Hunger will definitely come up eventually.
Oh, yeah,
because
we will at some point.
Our co-host is the star of it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
in the trailer, it's like, Sarah Roberts is in trouble or something like that. Like, wait, hey, Sarah, what'd you
think? I don't know. I have a secret thing. I just cite a blog thing.
Oh, started. My God, you're pregnant?
Yeah. No, on African history, by this point, I'll probably have a couple things up because I have, like, about 50 to 60 books on African history. So I've realized I should just... I spent way too much money. Yeah, at this point, it's probably... over $500 at this point, close to $1,000, but
totally worth it.
Yeah, I spent like $100 on a single book once, which I think was worth it. But so I'm kind of using that as excuse as like I can actually do something with all the this big collection of books I have. So something will be up by this point. I don't know what. It's kind of like cool. My other site. It's kind of what schedule is when I feel like doing something with it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So. Very cool.
So, Amanda, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me again, guys. I feel like we just did a more, too, so pretty exciting. Yeah.
We'll see you guys next time for Inside Man with hopefully Andrew Schwartz and Megan Dooley.
Nice.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.